All right, welcome back to Eco Word Magazine here on WURD, Progressive Black Talk Media. Now joining us is Andrea Lindsay. She is a lawyer at the Philadelphia Lawyers for Social Equity, and also Tahith Chappelle, who's founder of Color of Cannabis and the Can Atlantic Conference. Both are organizing for the Philadelphia Cannabis Business Association. More information on them, bit.ly/ Philly Cannabis. We're here talking about the state of the state of the cannabis industry, or the cannabis, the potential for that, the burgeoning cannabis industry in a state like Pennsylvania, but also the criminal justice incarceration issues that particular issue intersects with. Have them both here on Eco Word Magazine. How are you both doing? Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So, Andrew, I'm going to start with you. So we've got like two tracks of issues that especially Black people in Philly deal with when we talk about the legalization of marijuana. The first is about eliminating penalties, to stop the criminalization of marijuana, stop people from being prosecuted and jailed for something as minor, as small, that's really non-criminal as using marijuana for medicinal or recreational purposes. And the second one is about making sure that Black folks, okay, as we're decriminalizing and legalizing marijuana, that they're not excluded from the economic benefits of that industry. Because I see a lot of that exclusion taken, but the vast majority of people now who are making money hand over fist in the cannabis industry are white people. So we got to change that. Which of those issues is the highest priority right now?
You know, I think that that's a great question. And something that Tahith and I had talked about was actually the importance of education as a bridge between those two things. I think that we understand that people just don't know what their options are when they've been criminalized for this, that they have this history with a past marijuana conviction, and it kind of leaves them in a gray area for both of the things that you talked about. So I think that that particular education piece of what's actually happening with existing criminal records and what people can do to clear them, to make way to kind of address that second issue you talked about. It's all related in a soup of education as a bridge there.
Mm-hmm. And so, let's get into that first problem of, eliminating the penalties that have resulted from that criminalization of cannabis use. And so where do we start from? Well, first, let's give an overall picture of like what that looks like in a state like Pennsylvania, and you can also kind of throw in some national trends there as well, because the impression that like we as the public get is that this is largely being decriminalized. And so there aren't any problems with cannabis criminalization. Yet we still do. Right.
We are still dealing with cannabis criminalization. A lot of people, I'm gonna dovetail off of what Andrea said. This is all about education. A lot of people don't realize that even though Philadelphia became the first major city in Pennsylvania to decriminalize marijuana possession, it's still illegal if you're not a medical marijuana patient if you leave Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. People are not realizing that even if you're carrying marijuana with you in Philadelphia, you may be safe, but as soon as you step outside of Philadelphia, you can be criminalized if you're not a medical marijuana patient. Mm-hmm. In fact, Normal came out with some data that said that police arrested more than 20,000 adults for marijuana possession in Pennsylvania during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So that's to say that there's still a lot of criminalization happening, and we need to get the word out as to letting people know what their rights are as consumers or patients of the plant. I'm also going to toss to Andrea too to answer this question as well, because there's a lot that we can be doing now well ahead of legalization when it comes to helping people ensure that they are prepared for this market to open up in Pennsylvania. And it starts with people who have been criminalized for the plant.
Yeah, expound more on that, Andrea. And also, talk about, I think that is there still confusion, even folks who have that type of license or have that type of approval to go outside a city like Philadelphia as a medicinal marijuana user or patient, I'm sure they run into some issues, right? I mean, I'm sure that those encounters with law enforcement or police, and then to just have to get into a conversation to prove or to show it like, oh no, I'm a medicinal, I use this for medical purposes, that can still get dicey, right?
Absolutely. I think that the other thing that we see is confusion around terms. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about clearing criminal records, There are basically three words that are important to know here. The first is going to be sealing. So that's what clean slate does. Sealing a criminal record is hiding it from public view. However, it does not apply to felony drug convictions, and there's a certain possession over a certain amount. Even for marijuana, that's going to have somebody have a felony drug conviction. So that's an issue with sealing. And then also, if a record is sealed, it's still visible to law enforcement. So it can show up in certain background checks, and that's a big issue. So we want to take that further to the other two processes. So there's expungement, which is physically erasing the record. That's something that it's kind of a buzzword here, but when we talk about marijuana convictions, you need to have a pardon before you can get an expungement. So that's the three words: sealing, pardon, expungement. For pardons, that's something I think is really important to do education around, because the Board of Pardons in Pennsylvania has a program for these nonviolent marijuana convictions. I think that that is an awesome first step, that when we look at other states that have legal cannabis, they have not had clemency until that happens. So Pennsylvania actually has leadership in that issue by having this program, but we're not yet seeing the people who are actually targeted by the war on drugs really knowing about this program or knowing how to take advantage of it. So that's something that we're helping with at Pulse Philly, to get as many Black and Brown people in Philadelphia as possible on this fast track at the Board of Pardons, so that there's a recognition that, hey, this plant shouldn't be illegal, and here's what you can do to move forward in getting that pardon, and then that's going to be the step to get you to an expungement and physically erasing that record.
So the key phrase there, Andrea, this plant, it is a plant. It's like so much trouble over a plant, something that grows out of the soil. And
medicinal plant, Charles. It's a literal medicinal plant.
Right, exactly. Talk about marijuana convictions, the impact that can have on a person's life. People can lose their kids, they can end up in jail. They're kept out of housing, they're kept from employment, simply once again for either taking or selling a plant that grows out of soil. So talk about the overall effect of those convictions, of that criminalization, on especially Black communities.
I mean, you did it so well. I mean, the effects are immediate, and we're not even talking about just the financial burden, right? There's the financial burden of a conviction that can, with fines and fees that are associated with that, that puts somebody in poverty or keeps somebody in poverty. That's an immediate effect. The other thing that's an immediate effect is potential job loss and the inability to get a job after you move on from your conviction or your case. And this is extremely important in the marijuana industry, because there's so many jobs that are being created. And let me level set this real quick for our listeners. According to data released by Leafly, which is one of the most authoritative cannabis news sites out there, a fully legal Pennsylvania market could see $2.3 to $3.3 billion in revenue within 3 to 5 years of opening. That translates roughly to $500 million in annual tax revenue and can support between 32,000 to 47,000 legal cannabis jobs. If you have a conviction, you are most likely not going to be able to enjoy that 32,000 job opportunities that are there, because companies are not hiring people with prior convictions, even if it's with marijuana. And so you're having people who are being locked up, participating in a business that they know about a plant, coming out from behind the wall, and suddenly you are not even able to become a bud tender. You can't become an inventory manager. You can't even join this legal market that is making multi-billion dollars in revenue. And that's the huge issue. That's what we're trying to address here too.
Yeah, no, that's real important. That's a lot of jobs. We're talking about an average 35,000 jobs, $500 million in tax revenue, upwards of $3 billion in, and we're seeing, other states benefit, but are we seeing that play out too, Tahid, Andrew? Are we seeing that play out where like those other states, like say, well, what are some states that come to mind that have legalized marijuana, that have a legalized marijuana industry that's blossoming, but we are seeing in large part Black people being excluded from it because of their criminal records, which is insane. It's like, okay, now you legalize it, but you're still leaving these people who some of those people were like some of the first pioneers in the sale of marijuana and cannabis.
I mean, the problem here, and Andrea can expand on this too, is that some states, not all, some states do not, when they legalize, some of them don't have any sort of mass expungement or retroactive expungement processes to help people automatically get rid of their marijuana conviction. Illinois does come up to mind, though. The governor did do, I believe, mass pardons, or they had some sort of way to do mass expungement in Illinois. But not all states are doing that. And so you're having people see this market come to life, and they don't have an expedited way or a fast track to be able to move on from their lives if they have a marijuana conviction to them. I don't think there is a clear standard that we're seeing, but that doesn't mean that Pennsylvania couldn't be the leader. And Andrea, I'll let you expand on
that. Yeah, go ahead, Andrea. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that this goes back to the point of clemency here, that right now it still requires people to actually come forward, that while there have been reforms at the Board of Pardons, which we certainly applaud in making it free to apply, they've simplified the application, you still need to know that this program exists. And when we think about scale and the scale of the issue here, I think that there needs to be some broader action that's not requiring an individual to know about that. Think that that's part of the purpose here, where we want people to know this program exists, but we also want to talk about what clemency actually looks like. So right. one of the stats that I want to share here is about how there were about 250 people that the governor, Tom Wolf, has signed these pardons for people who have these nonviolent marijuana convictions. And to his credit, he has signed every single one that has gotten to his desk that he's made a decision on. So that's awesome. I think that's incredible. And also 250 people compared to the scale of this issue. I know Tahid was just sharing some stats. Another one is that in a 10-year period from 2009 to 2019, mm-hmm. you know, there were 57,000 convictions for marijuana in Pennsylvania. So that's less than half of 1% here, and that's just 10 years. So I think that goes to why we need bold legislators here and empowered communities who know what their rights are. They know that they're here to say, you can't leave us out, and to really be advocating for this to be part of any recreational adult use statute in Pennsylvania.
Andrea, and just to follow up on that, so we're getting the sense, I find that sense too. I've had a couple of situations. I go back to last year, I remember someone, a word listener, calling in. They had a criminal record, and they didn't seem to know about the clean slate law, and that Pennsylvania was the first that this thing had been rolled out, you know. So I kind of took them offline, had them reach out to me via email, and I sent them, you know, and hey, you need to get in touch with these organizations and groups, and you need that activated, because they were having some trouble gaining some employment, and you know, just the brother just didn't. There were things that didn't seem to be aware of, and that it would help him in his case. Are we getting that general sense that there's still a vast segment of the Pennsylvania population that does not know about this clean slate law? And that clean slate law could dramatically change the situation as far as, you know, the need to gain employment and also to participate in an industry like this that's fast getting legalized.
Yeah, I think that there's efforts to improve clean slate so that these felony drug convictions apply to it. So I think that that is going to be an important step here. But I think that at Pulse Philly, we really recommend that people take that step further and actually get an expungement. So that expungement is going to physically destroy the record. So clean slate is a really good step. It's going to prevent your neighbor from Googling you and figuring out what's happening publicly, but it still exists. So we really want people to go and get their expungement, if they need a pardon for any convictions, to do that. And then by doing that process and being supported in it, I think that increases people's knowledge about these issues. And then they can definitely do the word of mouth that pardons are actually something that are accessible to people. It's not just for the wealthy or well-connected, but that this is something that we want everyone to know about and everyone to take advantage of.
Can I ask, Tahid? Okay, so what if we have a scenario here where, like, in a state like Pennsylvania, you already have Philadelphia, where it's legal for you to carry around or to carry marijuana. You can't use it out in the open. You can't use it out in public. Is that
right? Don't smoke it in public.
You're allowed to use it and carry it, do not smoke it in public. People are doing that. However, there seems to be like a cognitive dissonance when it comes to employers. I mean, a lot of people worry about that. They worry about expanded or increased cannabis usage among especially young Black people. And then they're going and trying to get a job. You hear a lot of older Black people raise this where they're like, you know, I'm worried about the younger generation. They're increasing their cannabis usage, but they're going into a potential job or prospective employment situation. They may smell like it or the employer may know that they do it. How do we bridge that gap where like employers are understanding that, hey, listen, it's a new landscape, it's a new environment, and using cannabis should not, just like a person who smokes cigarettes, you don't deny them a job, so you shouldn't be denying jobs to people who use cannabis.
I do want to point out to the listeners that are worried about our youth that there are multiple studies to show that actual marijuana legalization does not lead to increased youth. In fact, the American Medical Association last year came out with the study that says that states that did enact marijuana legalization for adults, youth marijuana use did not actually go up. In fact, I believe in Colorado, youth marijuana use went down. People speculated that once people saw their parents smoking cannabis that they didn't want to smoke anymore. Mm-hmm. But to the listeners out there, just know that there is studies that show that youth consumption or use does not go up. So again, going back to the education, we have to let people know that this isn't a scary boogeyman. And in terms of employers, we are
especially with drug testing, right? You know, how did they remove cannabis from that like drug testing schedule? Like, you know, just say, well, hey, you know what? It's fine. We don't need to search for marijuana anymore because it's like we're in a legalized or a decriminalized environment. A lot of employers still don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, people like the Philadelphia Cannabis Business Association, the Philadelphia Lawyers for Social Equity, that's why we're working together to try to get this education out, to let people know what their rights are. And I think employers should be actively involved in understanding how they can keep their workers protected, but not infringe on their rights to be able to have access to this medicine. We have to go back to say that this is a medicinal plant and that this is medicine and that workers should be able to have access to their medicine and not be impeded by their employers.
Yeah, got it. Got Andrew, you want to add to that? Like how we reconcile that, especially with employers? I mean, and are there direct conversations that are happening like in a place like Philadelphia with like, you know, the Greater Philadelphia Chamber of Commerce, right? Direct conversations with employers to say, hey, listen, you guys need to set a new standard. We're in a new day and age.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that there's so much stigma still as with Black and brown people using marijuana. The same, we know that drug usage rates are the same among different races. And so trying to help overcome that stigma, which goes back to education, I'm going to say it again, that all of this can work together here in showing again, people use it the same, that it's not dangerous. And I think that that piece of it is part of the empowerment that we want to come through these mobilized communities who have been targeted and harmed by the war on drugs, coming together to actually benefit here from this growing industry in Pennsylvania.
Got it. How can we allocate? Okay, so the money that potentially can be generated from an expanded cannabis industry, how are we, what are some of the thoughts that we have or ideas we have in terms of allocating that new revenue into other initiatives and programs? How can we bring it back to those communities, help them build their villages, as opposed to using this money for more war on drugs activity or for the enhancement of law enforcement? Like, you know, how do we do that?
Let's make sure that we do not give money to cops. Please do not allocate tax revenue generated from cannabis sales to cops. We know that cops do not make our community safer. We know that other things do improve the safety of our neighbors. We know that schools, grocery stores, mental health services, parks and recreational centers. For the listeners here, look at Colorado and see how they use their tax revenue. They're building schools. They're allocating money to build new schools and support their infrastructure and their roads. Yeah. Oakland.
I was just in Denver last week. Yeah. And I happen to know, I know Mayor Michael Hancock in Denver really well, and a lot of those legislators out there, and a good best friend of mine is a former Senate president, Colorado Senate president, and they all talk about it. I mean, they're building that. They're exactly doing what you just said they're doing. Yeah, yeah, they talk about that.
There is so much for us to reimagine public safety using this new generated revenue. I encourage all lawmakers and people in political spaces to really talk about how can we start allocating money to help people who have been most destabilized by the war on drugs. I was going to mention that Oakland, for example, is actually using some of that money to reinvest back into the cannabis operators. They're trying to create grants. They're trying to create funds to allow people who want to be entrepreneurs and enter the space to be able to get the money, the financial support. So there's opportunity for financial and technical support. There's opportunity to reimagine public safety. And there's an opportunity to start reconciling and adding reparations from this new cannabis tax revenue that we're seeing.
And Andrea, for folks who want to get more information, because you have this marijuana amnesty project that is happening now, it is ongoing. So where do people go to first? I mean, do they go to Philadelphia Lawyers for Social Equity? I think that's at PLSEphilly.org, right? Is that the first point of contact?
Absolutely. And you can go ahead right now and fill out our online intake. It takes about 10 minutes at most. If you have access to a computer or a smartphone, we recommend you get started. It's PLSEphilly.org/intake. And we can help with criminal records for things besides marijuana too. So if you're not sure, please fill out our intake and we'll get back with you and see if we're able to help.
So PLSEphilly.org/intake. So if you or a loved one or some member in your community, in your village, has that criminal record, and you know, so you're looking to, you know, kind of start the process for expungement, go to PLSEphilly.org/intake today. So no, thanks so much for that information. It's valuable information for a lot of folks out there. You know, once again, we've been talking to Tahid Chappelle, also Andrea Lindsay. They've been joining us here today to talk about their project with the Philadelphia Lawyers for Social Equity. They are also organizing for the Philadelphia Cannabis Association. More information on that at bit.ly/PhillyCannabis. Tahid is founder of the group Color of Cannabis and also the Can Atlantic Conference. Andrea Lindsay, a lawyer at the Philadelphia Lawyers for Social Equity, go to PLSEphilly.org. I really appreciate this. You both, you know, sort of illuminating me on some issues, because I don't follow this issue closely enough. So it's something that every time I do have a conversation about it, I'm learning something new. So thank you so much again.
Thanks so much
for having us. We really appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk with you again for sure. We'll get a follow-up and an update. So thanks. So keep in touch. All right. Be safe out there. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.